Let's turn to Acts, her first of the historical books in the New Testament. Actually, it's the only historical book in the New Testament. The first history of the church, as it's called, and as Luke records it, continuing on from his gospel, the gospel, as we call it, of Luke. And, you know, he wrote the gospel to O Theophilus, as he says. Theophilus, God's seeker, God lover, and he writes as well in the beginning of Acts, he's addressing Theophilus as well. Theophilus is both a name which is found in antiquity, but it could also be, of course, one which we would apply to all of us, God seekers, God lovers. And it's likely that Theophilus, whoever he was, whether an actual individual or one who was a God lover, was one who was Gentile by birth, and so stood outside of the thread of the synagogue and of all Jewish history. And so Luke has a way of like drawing us into that story, that thread of Jewish history in which the church is the culmination, the pinnacle, the story, as it's been called, the salvation history, which culminates in Jesus Christ. There's a beautiful prayer, hymn, it is in our hymnal, but as it's written, it's a prayer by Francis Havergal. It was written in 1874, and I want you to think about 1874. 1874 was, what, 10 years after the Civil War? And it was in the midst of really the winding down of what's called in our history the Reconstruction. You know, the era after the war in which this Confederacy was to be about integrating, be about finally bringing justice, which was so hard fought for and by the Union, bringing about the union together of people who were enslaved and people who were their masters with the whip and hand. Of course, that promise, that hope, was never realized. Ulysses S. Grant, the president who came after Andrew was Andrew, wait a minute, what is his, Andrew Johnson, sorry. Andrew Johnson was kicked out, was impeached. By the time of Grant, the Ku Klux Klan, can you believe this? The Ku Klux Klan had arisen, and Grant pushed through several acts which allowed him to raise up the army again, to send to the South troops to bring under control the states where the Klan had reimposed what it was like beforehand. They were shooting hundreds of black people to get this control back. And so it's in the midst of this type of story, our history, that Havergal wrote, "Take my life and let it be." Doesn't just stop there, does it? It's not let it be alone. Don't bother me, God. Let me just live like I want to. No, he writes, take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow, those moments and days, in endless praise. Take my hands, he writes, and let them move at the impulse of thy love. Take my feet and let them be swift and beautiful for thee. Take my voice and let me sing however we sing. Whether we're making a joyful noise or a beautiful, beautiful song. Always only for my King. Take my lips and let them be filled with messages. Whatever that manner you have of bringing the word of salvation to people is. We all have that same message of the gospel to give. Let it be filled with messages from thee. Take my silver and my gold. Not a mite would I withhold. Take my intellect, however that may be, and use it. Every power for thee. Take my will and make it thine. It shall be no longer mine. Take my heart, it is thine own. It shall be this place, thy royal throne. We don't only have four stanzas in our hymnal, but there's six in his original prayer. The last, take my love, my Lord, I pour at thy feet its treasure store. Take myself, and I will be ever only all for thee. Paul's journey, this is second missionary journey, as it's called, was a circuit around all the major and minor port cities, mostly remote little villages of the ancient Roman Empire and of the Eastern Mediterranean. And here, having been in Corinth, a major port city, and that junction between Greece and Macedonia, Paul writes, where am I at? Here we are. Paul stayed on in Corinth for some time. I'd like to know what that really means, some time. Whatever it means, certainly it's an indication to me that he didn't just hightail it out of there. It's in Corinth, remember, that he was brought before Gallio, who was the proconsul, the governor of that region of Corinth, and he was tried to be brought up on trumped-up charges by the Jewish leaders, and Gallio said, yeah, get out of here. I'm not going to get involved in your internecine quarrels, you Jewish people. Solve it on your own. And so what did they do? No, they didn't get a hold of Paul. They got a hold of, as it says, the Sosthenes, the synagogue ruler, and beat him in front of the court. I don't know if Sosthenes was a Jewish Christian or if he was actually brought and beaten by the others, by the the rest of the Jewish leaders because he couldn't stop Paul from preaching. Either way, Sosthenes took the brunt. Gallio stayed completely out of it. As you might say, he showed no concern whatever. And so then it continues in the passage. Paul left the brothers, the sisters of the church as well, because remember, Priscilla and Aquila were from Corinth, and sailed for Syria. He crossed, in other words, the Aegean Sea, that little stretch of the Mediterranean Sea that goes up between Greece and over into what's now modern Turkey. He sailed across that stretch of land, first going to the town of Cenchrea because of a vow he had taken. Cenchrea is the eastern port city of Corinth. Remember, Corinth is in a what's called an isthmus, a little tiny stretch of land. So you think of Greece as a hand that's down and to the south. Then there's this little stretch of land where Corinth lay. And then above that was Macedonia. And so on the western side of the isthmus was Corinth. On the eastern side was Cenchrea. And Paul had made, at that time, when he got to Cenchrea, having passed over the ridge, he had made some sort of, what does he say? A vow he had taken. Now, some have said there's been some debate about this vow. Was it a Levirate vow? Nazirite vow? The Nazirite vow could only be taken in Jerusalem, so it's unlikely that it was that. Nazirite vow does entail shaving the head, though. It also entails not drinking any wine, or I think it's also refraining from honey. I'd be in big trouble with that one. I love honey. And it's showing. The vow that he took likely was a vow of thanksgiving, just to have a time almost like we spend in fasting and prayer. This is a time where he, as a sign of the thanksgiving of what he had seen, had been a part of over in Corinth, the beginning of the church to which he wrote one of his two of his greatest letters. It's likely that that's what this vow, where he shaved his head, was about. And then from Cenchrea, it says that they arrived at Ephesus, there on the western shore of modern Turkey. It was at that time the Roman province of Asia. Near the town, interestingly, of Troy. Remember Troy? Where Helen, the face who launched 1,000 ships, was back in Homer's Iliad. Troy lay in ruins by this time. There was no Troy except the ashes of history. But there was this town which grew up, a fairly significant port city of Ephesus. But look at what it says about this. It says, as they arrived at Ephesus, Paul left Priscilla and Aquila, those Jewish converts to Christianity, there. He himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. In other words, he discussed with the Jews the gospel. He presented to them just like Franklin Graham did. He gave them the gospel. But he didn't remain at Ephesus. In fact, he says, when they asked him to spend more time with them, he declined. In other words, it wasn't time yet. One of his greatest letters, I think at least, is one of my favorite letters of Paul's to read is Ephesians. It speaks about, of course, that wonderful gift of grace that we have. God's grace through Jesus Christ. It says, by grace you have been saved. And this is not of your own doing. It is the gift of God. By grace you have been saved. But it wasn't time yet for him to speak those words. It wasn't time yet for him to present the gospel. It says, he then set sail from Ephesus. Said, if as he left, I will come back if it's God's will. But now, apparently the door was shut to him to remain at Ephesus. So he set sail from Ephesus. And when he landed, going across to Palestine to now what's modern Israel, he landed at Caesarea. This is Caesarea, as it's called, Maritima. The port city, it's on near Tel Aviv, modern Tel Aviv. In fact, Caesarea Maritima is a national park for Israel. They say the ruins of Caesarea Maritima are so fantastic, you can still see its theater, its hippodrome, where they would have run the races around, you saw in, what movie was that, where Charlton Heston raced around? Ben-Hur, thank you. So they would have raced around the hippodrome. Still in Ephesus are the ruins of the Forum. Ephesus was a significant town, but he did not stay there. He went, as it says, when he landed at Ephesus, he went up and greeted the church. Now, where do you think that was that he went up? To Jerusalem. That's where he went straight to. The mother church he went to. Of course, Jerusalem is, I don't know how many thousand, it's very high above the sea level. And so he went up to greet the church, to tell the church there of what God was doing in this his second missionary journey, and what those people who had come to Christ, what kind of a change it had wrought in their lives. I mean, Priscilla and Aquila, they left what they were doing there in Corinth and accompanied all the way across the sea to Ephesus itself. So he went to Jerusalem to give a report. But that wasn't alone. That wasn't where he stopped. It says then he went down to Antioch. Antioch was his sending church. Antioch's up in that, elbow, you might call it, where Turkey and Syria come together. Now it's very much fought over by ISIS, and that's where some of our American troops are, trying to keep ISIS from overwhelming Syria. But that's where Antioch was. And that's the church that sent Paul and Barnabas on their way, on this missionary journey. And that's where he came back to, and that's where he'll be sent from again on his third missionary journey. After spending some time in Antioch, Paul set out from there and traveled from place to place. It wasn't enough for him just to sit on his laurels, was it? He traveled from place to place throughout the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. Those Roman provinces, which are now in central Turkey, he went to visit and strengthened the disciples like Timothy, whom he had met there, like all the others whom he wrote the letter to the Galatians, which was a general letter to be passed around to all the churches that were in that province and others. It's now one of our, part of our canon of the New Testament. Take my life, Paul was willing to say, and let it be used for you, O God. Make something, even though I persecuted your church, make something out of the rest of my life. How many of us have felt the same way? That we're living on, as I heard someone say, borrowed time after we've given our life to Christ. That's what we are. We're living on borrowed time. All of us. And so, that song, as Paul went from Corinth to Cenchrea, Ephesus, Caesarea, Jerusalem, Antioch, and then all those towns throughout Galatia and Phrygia must have been echoing in his mind in some way. That song echoes in our mind. Where he led me, may I follow. And where he leads me, let us too follow. We have before us a church which is in a almost at the point of schism. But you know, the church has been in this place many times throughout its history. Like Micah said, there shall be always a remnant which will be faithful. And of course, the corollary to that is that there's a many which will not be. Who shall depart from the way. Who shall be like those Israelites and those to whom Micah wrote, who were being warned that the judgments of the Lord were about to descend upon them. And if they didn't turn from their ways, they would be destroyed. But there shall always be a remnant which shall survive and follow where he leads them. Let us be not among those who simply wanted to go their own way. To be like those whom Micah spoke of, upon which judgment shall fall. But rather let us be like those, the remnant who is faithful to the Lord and followed their King. Where he leads us, we shall follow. Amen? Let's rise.